This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Crazy ways are ever dead.
Welcome back to Almost Famous Minute, where we're discussing the 2000 Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Feels Like Weezer.
And I'm Shanti from Muses. And with me, as always, I have my beautiful co-host.
I'm Lynx. Hello. Nice to join you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you both. This has been a long time coming, and, you know, we were part of the same network. I'm not going to delve into that. I was barely going to mention that in the green room. But we kind of had our little technical issues and got past that. I came to know you through the network that I'm on. You were on. It's great. I love the show. I've listened to a few episodes here and there of Muses. It's a lot of fun. It really, really plays a big role in this movie, I think. You know,
I've used
the word muse as to just help describe Penny several times now over the course.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we're a big fan of yours as well. Oh, and you. We love this movie. We love muses. We love groupies.
Yeah.
So we're really excited to chat about this movie, about Penny Lane.
The awful G word.
Some might see it that way. But
you claim it, right?
We claim it.
Absolutely.
We're proud groupies.
Well, I'm so glad. This is minute 90 this week here. It's like week 70, essentially. But minute 90 starts with Penny explaining that she's no good at goodbyes and ends with William half-lying on the phone.
I love this scene. I really do. I'm no good at goodbyes. Yeah.
It's very you, Shanti, actually. Did you pick this for us? Because I felt like when I found out we were doing this, it felt right. It felt like we were meant to cover this one.
Yeah, well, when I got the document, I definitely made sure that we had a Penny heavy scene.
Good.
Oh yeah, that would, yeah, it, you know, it would have been crazy to not have any Penny.
So there were lots of good Penny Lane scenes, of course. And this one, I don't know, it feels like we're kind of wrapping up in a way towards the movie. And we see her as a fully formed character at this point, and William too. So I'm excited to chat about them and some of the things that we like about this scene and the things that maybe we don't, or we go,
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's definitely, yeah, this is almost like the, we'll be getting to it in, I guess, in about a minute or two here away, essentially. Yeah, two, I think. But yeah, it's definitely like the third of kind of the cringy moments that, if it were a movie made today, 20 plus years later, it's possibly.
Oh, you any, know any that we have that in our notes in minute 93.
Yeah.
We're definitely not strangers at talking about things like that in music history.
Mm-hmm. One thing I did want to pick up real quick, and we actually do hear it at the very, very beginning of this minute, or even throughout, good half of it, maybe at least, for the song that's playing. I meant to mention it last minute because I even said it at the minute previous. So I'm going to mention this thing for the next minute, and I forgot last minute with Mike. Mandolin that came in last minute and still here prominently this minute, played by Davy Johnstone, and man, I mean that is an instrument I'd love to pick up and try to play some. if I ever found one, or I almost, you know, I was in at least one contest, if not a couple little or raffle things, you know, to possibly win one at one point. But no luck there. But yeah, I mean, if there's anything the two of you want to get into at least a little bit of for the song that's playing, Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters.
I once kissed a mandolin player.
Oh, wow.
Showing off the groupiness already.
Yep. Well, you were here to represent. Yeah, I love this song, and I love the album that it's on. I love Honky Chateau. For me, I feel like if you're entertaining, it doesn't matter who you have over at your house. Mm. You can put on Honky Chateau, and it's the right atmosphere. It's the right mood. Everybody will enjoy it. So it's really one of my favorites, if not favorite, Elton John album, and I think that this is a beautiful song.
I agree, yeah, and it's perfectly fitting. Like you said, it just fits the mood so well. I'm so glad he used it for that specific scene. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's a song not only just about, you know, innocence lost and all that. So it really is the most perfect fitting song. And I've actually heard that that's one of Elton John's favorite songs of his as well.
Yeah, and I was definitely picking apart, you know, or not in a negative way, in a good way, especially the last minute of the two previous from when it started. All the things I felt like Cameron must have been, like, partially why he chose it with certain lyrics that are sung were just, like, hitting at the right moments for what was being on the screen. I mean, her blue dress and the sky and so forth. But so for this minute, I mean, it's you know, this dark outside or light, you know, this, I think it's this, you know, is this a good thing or a bad thing that this is happening to them, to her especially, and the scenes that ensue, you know, are definitely are all harkened back to this scene heavily.
Oh yes. Well, I don't know if you want to go into talking about some of the things that we were excited to talk about.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You definitely bring up some topics here.
Well, so what's happening? I love this scene because I also very much am a New York City person. I love New York City more than any other city. And
even though we're Canadians and we live in Toronto.
Well, you know, your home usually isn't your favorite place to be, right? I still love Toronto, but New York is just Toronto plus, I guess. And I really love this scene where he's running down the street and he goes and he ends up at the Plaza Hotel, which is where Penny's at. And I thought for this, I would tell you guys some really cool, fun Plaza facts. Yeah. So it's a really ritzy place now, but when it opened, it was just $2.50 a night, which I guess was around $60 today. Which I thought was very interesting.
Oh, yeah. You're saying $2.50 a night. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it was originally 8 floors, but they rebuilt it to 19. And that's when it opened in 1907. A lot of really cool things have happened at the Plaza. Mm-hmm. The popular children's book, Eloise, takes place at the Plaza. And there's this really famous portrait of her that hangs in the hotel. And it was actually stolen and only rediscovered a couple years ago, and that sold at auction for $100,000. And there's so many cool music moments that have happened at the hotel as well. In 1958, Miles Davis recorded a whole album there.
Wow.
Right? In the hotel's Parisian room. I think it came out in the 70s, though, but you can check that out. And the Plaza was actually the first place that the Beatles stayed in New York when they were on their tour in 1964. And they had the whole wing to themselves. And I don't know, have you ever seen the movie A Hard Day's Night?
Not A Hard Day's Night.
I'm so sorry. I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
I apologize. Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah.
So that takes place at the hotel, right? That's them getting ready for Ed Sullivan and everything, and the teenagers trying to sneak in there. That was all true. And I heard that they actually wrote the song Michelle while they were staying at the Plaza. Hmm. And that they took all the hangers when they left from the closets.
So they kind of share a little something with William with his
yes,
thievery.
Exactly. Yeah. Taking something souvenirs with them. I have a couple other cool facts. Chef Boyardee actually worked the kitchen there before he opened his own business.
Okay, links coming in hot.
I got another one for you. Truman Capote, he held his legendary black and white ball there. If you don't know about this, you should. It was called the Party of the Century. The photos from it are amazing. It was like all the rich and famous, over 500 guests. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, that sounds like something that he might do.
I have one more fact that's maybe my favorite of all of this, which was that in the Plaza, the Plaza had really a lot of big name owners. Conrad Hilton was one of the owners, and actually Donald Trump.
Okay.
He bought it in 88. He appointed his wife the hotel president. And under their leadership, the hotel's debt grew to $600 million. And long story short, he had to beg for money from the banks and finally had to sell it in 1995. So great businessman.
Yeah. Yep. Is the Plaza the hotel in Home Alone 2?
Absolutely it is.
Oh, okay. Wow, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and that's why.
Because he cameoed in it.
Yeah, he was the owner then. And you can also see the Plaza in a ton of other movies. Sleepless in Seattle, The Way We Were, Funny Girl. You can see it in Seinfeld.
So now stable. Now I had someone, and I think it actually was the last 2 minutes guest, Mike Josick, mentioning that we needed to talk about the apartment, Billy Wilder's The Apartment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the idea there, I think, is that it's also set, its whole, you know, construction plot of it is based on being set in this hotel, I believe.
I can't remember, but that's really fantastic. Probably.
I wasn't totally able to figure that out for sure. Based on its plot, and I think I saw it once, like when I was 12 or something.
It is a great film to revisit, actually. Yeah, I go to the Plaza every time I go to New York. Oh, they have a really cool kind of mini mall downstairs that sells all this specialty things. It's just such a staple, and it's right, you know, at the base of the park. So, and if anyone's curious, I think Stillwater was staying at the Gramercy Park, which is pretty much straight south down Fifth Avenue. I think that they're around Lexington. Mm.
And I wonder where Max's Kansas City is in relation to the you have a triangle.
I can tell you where
sort.
It is.
Yeah, wonderful.
Max's was a little south, like maybe 3 or 4 blocks south of Gramercy Park. Yeah. And then from Max's up to the Plaza, it would be about an hour walk.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
15-20 minute cab ride.
And so what we saw last minute or two, what have you, William Running.
Yes.
You know, and as you know, I think we assume that she's been here a while in order to do what she's done.
So she
probably took the taxi. He was able to get the taxi, but you know, as a woman probably could have, especially in the dress that she's wearing.
Yeah. William was around like 21st Street, and he had to run all the way up to 59th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Great geography. That's something definitely last minute, I was saying. I didn't do my geography homework on this, so.
It's just because I love New York that much.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I have not been yet, but it's definitely something that's high on my list.
Oh, it's great when you love film.
Probably a couple years, roughly.
Yeah.
And you did mention that Penny may have been there for a while, but actually, I'm going to give you the history of Quaaludes.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we might want to jump back to it because I want to mention something at the beginning of this minute. But I read and I learned that it only takes 30 minutes for Quaalude to have an effect. So she might not have been there longer than we might have thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that makes sense. Like 30 minutes for it to kick in. That's about the time if he was running like a maniac. Yeah.
But we'll get into the history of Quaaludes in a moment. If we want to go back to, we're talking the Plaza Hotel, we're talking about just the beginning of this minute here. And Penny is saying, you are the last of my old time friends. And then she starts talking about some of her girls, some of her band-aids. And she talks about Palexia. Palexia went to England with Deep Purple. Mm-hmm. And then she asks, where's Beth? And then I had to think for a second when I rewatched that, and I was like, Beth. And then I remembered Beth from Denver, right. Beth the clairvoyant from Denver, and just how really great a lot of these cast members are, even for, and then you look up a picture of Beth from Denver, and she's in so many scenes. She's in so many kind of behind the scenes, and they are just great characters in themselves, and they look beautiful doing. And I think Beth is one of my, I don't know if we can call her underrated. Do you think she's underrated? Okay, but I think she's one of the best characters in this movie.
I quote her all the time with the, I mean, when you mention her being clairvoyant, I love saying your aura is purple. I love that.
It's really fantastic color.
Yeah. That's what I imagine Beth was doing all the time to literally everyone she ever met. So I feel like you don't even need to see what she's doing on screen. Just have her in the corner talking to someone and you already know the conversation. Yep. You know?
I have 100% after a couple of glasses of wine read a rock star's palm. Let me see your palm. See this line here?
Yeah. The other thing with the they mentioned Palexia went to England with Deep Purple, so I did cover that two or three minutes ago now with Joe, I think it was, about in the deleted scene from the untitled cut, that's where we, in a sense, previously learned, unless you're watching only the theatrical version, that Palexia was on her way to the airport to go with Deep Purple.
Right. Okay. So when William finally, or not finally, but he calls up, or he calls the front desk and asks for a doctor, he says, my wife's had an accident with some Quaaludes. I looked into the history of Quaaludes, like I said. Do you want to hear a little bit about it?
Oh, please.
Okay. So this sedative pill has been banned in the U.S. for over 30 years. I got my information from a 2015 BBC article called The Rise and Fall of Quaaludes. And if we want to think about another Quaalude depiction in a movie, we can think about Leonardo DiCaprio's depiction in the Martin Scorsese film The Wolf of Wall Street. He can barely speak. He can't walk. He can't drive. And
great scene. It
is pretty messed up. So a Quaalude is a trade name for methaqualone, which was first synthesized in India in 1951. By the time it got to the States, people were using it to treat insomnia and anxiety, and they were really, really easy to obtain. So much so that the Quaalude earned the nickname of Disco Biscuit.
I love it.
Okay. Well, that name doesn't jive to me with what you were just saying. I mean,
it's true.
The way you just described it, I mean, I equate it to the upper or downer, and so it sounded like a downer.
Yeah. Oh, and was it ever?
To treat it.
There are a few musicians who have sang about the Quaalude, including David Bowie's Quaaludes and Red Wine, and Frank Zappa speaks of Quaalude Moonlight. As I had said a little bit earlier, it only takes 30 minutes to have an effect and can last up to 6 hours. And it is very, very dangerous when mixed with alcohol.
Yeah.
When it kind of got off the market, and in the 90s, Rohypnol came along, they nicknamed like the roofie the Quaalude of the 90s. Because they're both quick to work, they erase memory, and it's a muscle relaxant. So that's the history of the lewd. I don't know if anybody calls it the lewd, but I just named it that.
It's interesting how it had such a strong presence for such a short period of time. It's like here and then it was gone.
Yeah,
I mean, for good reason.
Like what, 20, 20 or 30 years, maybe, roughly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
60s, 80s, maybe.
Every time I talk to someone that was around in that period of time, the 70s and 80s, they all have a Quaalude story. Oh, wow. And they all love sharing it. Which I'm happy to hear. So,
is your dad one of them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah. It sounds like they were something else, though. Like, not heavy, heavy things. Like, not for the... At least we see what happens to Penny here.
Mm. Yeah.
Hmm. Now, okay, so my biggest question, I think, for this incident, so to speak, overall, and I mean, with what happens here in this minute, it's him going to call for a doctor, and you know, it's that he seems to be knowledgeable enough, because I certainly wouldn't be necessarily all that knowledgeable. I mean, if someone's just kind of passing out, they're passing out, and to me, that doesn't immediately mean that they've overdosed. Except, I mean, it is an empty bottle.
Well, she did say that she took them as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, I know she said she took them, but I mean, she took them, you know, meaning to, you know, to really, you know, possibly cause herself real serious harm versus just, you know.
Do you know what I think gave away the fact that she was almost about to pass out? Was the look on her face at the very beginning of this minute. When she's leaning up against the door frame and has a glass of champagne in her hand, the look in her eye that she gives him is what gives it away, is what he picked up on.
Also, when he's dancing with her, her feet are dragging. He's carrying her by the end.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you're saying in the latter, in the next minute or so.
Yeah.
Right.
After he's called it. Sure. But after. Everybody watch the minute before, over again. For the first moment he sees her, that look in her eyes, and that's the thing, is why Kate Hudson was Penny Lane and did such an incredible job in this role, is for what she could do with her face and with her eyes. And I think that second is an example of it.
Yeah. So I guess my biggest comment based on my question is that, so he seems like this is indicating to me that he's knowledgeable enough at this point. You know, maybe some of the girls or even the guys in the band or roadies or someone had kind of, you know, clued him in. Hey, if you're ever around and you see this happening, because I mean, it's just, even though his mother is such a don't do drugs mother, you know, it's hard to imagine that she would clue him in as to what to look for.
Yeah, or maybe he saw it already.
Yeah. Something else could have happened. Someone else could have called, you know, called for help.
Yeah, or maybe somebody, because they've all taken him under their wing, had said, hey, you see that, like, bottle of stuff over there? Don't touch it, man, because if you do.
Yeah, I think at the time, too, Quaaludes were, you know, a pretty well-known enough thing. But I get William Miller's world is only just opening up. Thank God he...
Now, I don't want to miss the chance to gloss over this, because Muses is a podcast all about groupies, about muses, rock wives, girlfriends, and our love for them. So we can't say the names Polexia and Beth and Sapphire without, I've got to know, who is your favorite groupie Band-Aid in the film? Besides, I mean, if you want to pick Penny, you can pick Penny. But if you have any other that would have been your girl? Links, you can answer that question too.
Definitely. For me, I mean, yeah, because I've definitely had a couple guests have indicated, oh yeah, I mean, even though, like, it's essentially my most main kind of co-host, because every now and then I essentially, with some guests, I do kind of assign one that seems to have a little bit more of a familiarity with the Movies by Minute concept, or extremely, extremely well known with the way into the movie. That's Aaron Stark. He was my first, you know, co-host / guest. I mean, he definitely had the take of, okay, Penny, I mean, he just fell in love with Penny when he first saw it and loved it forever and ever. But I think he even might have mentioned, like, Polexia. But I could be wrong on that. But so for me, I mean, Penny, yeah. But I mean, I also kind of have to go towards Sapphire a bit, I think. you know.
I agree 100% with Sapphire. She's amazing. And I feel like she's like Penny, sort of beyond what the younger groupies. Right. She's lived enough and she's really there for the music. And she's just the older, wiser, and of course, gorgeous.
Yeah. A little bit of like a mother hen-ish, you know.
Yeah.
Just keeping I love track, her presence. You know, she's taking care of
everyone, really.
Well, the band, I was trying, like Marianne with the pot. Was it Marianne?
Yeah.
I was trying to think of the right name.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is not Marianne with the pot.
Do you agree with that, Shanti? Yeah. Sapphire?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I think for the small amount of like talking time that Beth got, she really stole the scene that she was in.
Mm-hmm. And then for me, the other thing with Sapphire, and it's, you know, for the actor playing her, is for Rosa Balk. You know, yes. I mean, I was one of the people as a kid, as a, you know, like an 11 to 12 year old, I think, when it came out, Return to Oz. You know, I definitely love that movie. Saw it in the theater. I'm almost positive. And then a few times over the next few years, you know, as I was, you know, going through puberty, you know, you know, and even though I really didn't quite get her name at that point, you know, I think she definitely stood out as
she was a 90s queen for a while.
Okay.
I loved her. I mean, The Craft. What was the Billy? Or not the Billy.
The Waterboy?
Waterboy, thank you.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that forever.
Wow. Yeah, me neither. But I definitely remember her in it. And I do remember she was in like Valmont. It was like the original Cruel Intentions.
Oh.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, I mean, Lynx is the film buff out of us, so. Yeah.
Well, going back to this one, we should talk a little bit about the graduation cuts.
Wait, that's in the next minute.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Sorry.
Yep.
Apologies.
No problem.
Okay. I'm just trying to think. Oh, Eric, have you talked about or did you hear about Bijou Phillips getting kicked off the set?
I think a little bit. I've heard a little bit about that, and I that's actually what I kind of came up with the idea that, you know, because it seems like between her character, Estrella or Estrella. Do you have a take on that? You know, that it's almost seems like why Beth from Denver came in.
Yeah.
Because they wanted a fourth Band-Aid there, you know.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, her presence is just suddenly there and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Which is like, it works naturally too.
Does
like even if that's something that they didn't mean to happen, but yeah, I only just found that out after watching some of the you know, in honor of the 20th anniversary of Almost Famous with Cameron Crowe.
Well,
what
I mean,
he was saying, so I had just picked that up and went, oh, yeah, I guess she does kind of drop out of the film at that point, but I never even realized or understood why.
Well, then there was definitely the indication that someone was kind of causing some problems.
Yeah.
So I don't, when I kind of read and heard about that, not too, you know, somewhat recently, I don't think there was that name attached there, but yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, allegedly she was trying to get Patrick Fugit off set and they were driving around in a golf cart and she didn't get him back in time. And there was a little bit of like inappropriate things that she was trying to do. And they were all looking out for him.
Yeah.
So it was almost a bit too much like the art imitating life, or rather life imitating art. So they felt like it wasn't a safe place with her around. And from my understanding of what I heard Cameron Crowe say, that's why she was asked to leave the set, or she was
you know, so, you know, I think the only other things, you know, that I would want to pick up on is, you know, I mean, she does this amazing, you know, flip over the couch or sofa or settee or whatever it might be, you know, and she's holding the wine glass while she's doing this to start. And she does kind of, I think she just certainly helps William with it a bit, or really Patrick, you know, as actors performing this little stunt, so to speak,
That, it's interesting,
you know,
too.
Yeah, William maintains the wine from not spilling too much. I think there are a few droplets.
I think that's
and the whole place is a mess. If you look around, yeah, the whole hotel room is a mess. So it like doesn't even matter. Yeah, that's a cute.
Well, I think that's like something to do with Cameron Crowe and how great a director he is, where it is this scary, intense scene, but it's also got some humor in there and like lightheartedness.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get into Kate's outfit in another minute, but the scene where her feet go up on the couch, the boots were chosen specifically for that they knew that her feet were going to be shown. So those were like hand embroidered boots made especially for her.
Yeah. And we definitely had some insight to the dress, apparently, that the costume designer at some point, after the movie, was indicating like in an interview or something that the length of the dress was, determined by the material that they had. It could have been a little bit longer.
Yeah. That's actually how the mini skirt was invented.
Yeah. Wow.
So we covered this on an episode that we did with Jean and Chrissy Shrimpton, where I covered the sister Chrissy and Lynx did Jean, and Jean dated Mick Jagger.
You swapped the names, but yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. And I talked about how the miniskirt was invented just because she was going on a press tour to Australia and her designer didn't have enough fabric. So she went out wearing this really short skirt, but she didn't have any stockings. And then it was accidentally invented. So, yeah, that happens. And it's great.
Is there any more notes? There's definitely, maybe one other thing that people I've been talking about. I don't think it was, in that previous minute, but it definitely appears here, this boombox in the back of the scene that, and it was in, I think it was in, might have been a deleted scene way back in one of the previous hotels. Definitely not this one. It's the first time we're here. But, this boombox has been around, has made its way through the movie.
Yeah, it's hard to miss it.
But, for 73, it seems a little out of place. It seems a little, it's a bit more 10 years later, roughly.
My great aunt had something that looks like that. Wow. And then my grandmother on the other side of the family somehow got it. So it's sitting in her living room. And I'm going to go check it out next time I'm there. And I'm going to figure out when that puppy was made, because it looks pretty similar. And those ladies kept their shit in pristine condition, let me tell you. They didn't have any, my great aunt didn't have any kids.
Anything else?
For this minute,
Minute 92, I think that's it, yeah.
Well, great. So we definitely want to find out from, I think we're going to talk with Shanti first, about ranking the four bands that are believed to, are the most commonly believed to make up Stillwater. Kind of be the inspirations for you. Allman Brothers Band, Eagles, Led Zeppelin, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. And you can go, let us know. Are you going to go from least favorite or?
I'll probably start with favorite. Yeah. So I would choose as my favorite of the four to be Led Zeppelin. When I first started collecting records, and I started collecting records, not to brag, before any of my friends did. So I made some friends in my early university days because they heard that, one, I had a record player, and two, I had just gotten a kitten. So they came over and they wanted to listen to stuff on vinyl. So I'm going to say that Led Zeppelin is my first, probably because I own the most albums of theirs. I can name more songs. That would be my first one. My second is going to be the Eagles, because my mom grew up on them. And while I know that like the individual band members, like they've got some problems and they're dicks or whatever. If I'm on a road trip, I'll put on some Eagles. I'll put on When Hell Freezes Over. I'm going to say for my third, but I think this is going to change. I'm going to say the Allman Brothers because I'm now just researching them. I guess I didn't grow up and, you know, we weren't an Allman family. So this is the one kind of band that I would have had to listen to myself. And not a lot of people around me have listened to them or been like, hey, check out this album. But right now I'm reading this book called Please Be With Me, a song from my father, Dwayne Allman, written by his daughter. And so I'm going to be doing an episode on her kind of based on the daughter's perspective of the rock star. So as I do that, I like to listen to the music as I and I'm starting to realize that I will probably like them more than I like the Eagles. I just can't say for sure because I just don't know enough yet. Which brings me to my last band, which is Lynyrd Skynyrd. I haven't heard enough of them to put them anywhere other than the fourth.
Oh yeah, sure.
And that's my ranking.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's I mean, so many people, have been putting Zeppelin. This is going to be pretty much the clear winner. But Eagles certainly bounces around. I mean, every now and then someone has them at their first, but then quite a few have them at their last, though, too.
Yeah.
They're the most polarizing.
Like, I was just going to say that you love them, you hate them. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And we have a bit of personal connection with Led Zeppelin, and we can talk about this in the next minute because we're going long, but we're good friends with Pamela DeBar. Stay tuned.
that's great to hear, and we'll certainly hear more from Lynx tomorrow, or I'm sorry, next week, for her ranking, and further on we'll get the more information that we usually get at the end of it. Either or both of you kind of just chime in and big amount of plugging of your main show and anything else you have going on.
All right.
Yeah. Do you want me to do this, Shanti?
Yeah, go ahead. And if you miss anything, I'll just come up behind you and I'll...
Perfect.
You know what I do. You know what I do.
All right. Well, yeah, you can find us literally anywhere you get your podcasts. It's called Muses. We also have a website, MusesPod.com. We're on everything. We just got a TikTok started. I'm on there every day telling you facts about songs and muses and all sorts of stuff. We have a Patreon, Muses Podcast. What else, Shanti?
So, yeah, our podcast is pretty fun. We've been doing it for 5 years now, so we have hundreds of episodes, and we kind of give you anything from a book review, like the one that I had just mentioned, from a rock star's daughter or wife, and we read the book and we evaluate it. And we also interview these women. So we have interviewed Linda Ramone. We actually went to the Ramone Ranch and we spent an afternoon with Linda and we interviewed her and we got to talk about all of her past and what she's been doing lately. And we got a tour of the Ramone Ranch. It was fantastic. We've interviewed Pamela DeBar, world's most famous groupie and author. We've talked to Maureen Van Zandt, who's been married to little Steven Van Zandt for many years. Joe Wood, who was married to Ronnie Wood of the Rolling Stones. So not only do we talk about these women, but we talk to these women. And if you go to our website, if you go to wherever you find your podcast, it's all going to be there. Jump around, choose whatever episode looks good to you. You can pretty much start anywhere.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's a great show. Muses, definitely encourage everyone to go listen to that. And you mentioning TikTok. What you mentioned, that, I mean, that sounds interesting. You know, I don't have the app. I've only seen things that are kind of, you know, ported over and shown in at Reddit or else other places, maybe, of TikTok videos, what have you. But, that may, get me to try it out a little bit here.
Lynx packs a lot of information into the 60-minute time limit. She always has. Yeah. Oh my God, 60 seconds. Yeah. 1 minute, just like these clips. So she always has a great graphic behind her, the song playing that she's talking about. And you really learn a lot. And she's got a whole bunch up. And even I watch them and I'm always like, shit, she's good.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you both. I really do hope we continue this on with you for these next 2 or 3 minutes, I believe. 3 total?
Mm-hmm. We'll be here.
Yeah, that'll be great. And so, yeah, we'll be back next week with Shanti and Lynx from Minute 91. And until then, it's all happening.
It's all happening.
I am a golden god! Yeah!
Queen of Hearts is always your best bet.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.